What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Pit Life Barbecue Podcast. It is 8 o'clock on Monday night. That means one thing. Let's kick off the week of Q. So coming to you live from the Uncle Steve Shake Studios in Center Barnstead, New Hampshire. Uncle Steve Shake has 16 amazing flavors, including the sauce with no name, the new magic ribs, great customer service. Steve answers the phone. He returns the emails. Any questions you have, he'll hand it. He'll take it care of it with you. He'll have a conversation with you, trying to figure out your profile that you're looking for. And everything like that, your freshest ingredients. It's, man, if you could ever see the shake room down at Steve's place, man, oh, man. But check him out at UncleStevesShake.com and also his Facebook group, Uncle Steve Shake Nation, for all the latest and greatest information and everything on shake. Uncle Steve Shake, shake some on everything. Also brought to you by Joe's Meat Market, the Diamond of Royce City, Texas. Gabriel and his crew do an outstanding job. Anything you need for your competition this weekend or just firing it up in the backyard with family and friends, Gabriel and his crew at Joe's Meat Market have you covered. Precious cuts. Specialty cuts available. He can take care of it. Freshest produce, whole line of rubs, seasonings, other groceries, whatever you need. Feel a little hungry? Sit down and grab a bite to eat. Gabriel's mom will sit there and make you some tacos, get you a nice bowl of menudo. Take care of you right there, guys. So check them out at Joe's Meat Market right in Royce City, Texas. Joe's Meat Market for the win. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Yes, guys, I can be fashionably late. It's my show, and I'll be late if I want to. Daddy Dutch, back. What's up? Judge Webb, Brother Steven, what's happening? Tim Rogers, what's going on? Robert Krakus, what's happening? All right. I'm excited, guys. I hope you guys are excited. The world of barbecue, once again, is going in a different, another direction, or continuing on the trajectory of ways to get it. I am so happy to have back Pat Martin from Martin's Barbecue Joints. As you remember, he joined me, got to be about 2 years ago with the release of his book, Life of Fire, and all live fire cooking whole hog. But let's get it right from the man himself. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Pat Martin. Pat, what's up, brother?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me back again. I appreciate you very much. Yeah.
Oh, excited. Man. Whenever Michelle reached out the other day, I'm like, oh, I go, yeah, Pat, I love Pat. She's like, well, we got big things coming. He's got some big things coming down the line. I'm like, oh, yeah. Don't say anything. And, you know, we'll get into that because I'm excited for it. Excited for it. I just watched a little something earlier that she sent, and it's like, ooh, it's got barbecue, it's got fire, it's got guns, it's got cigars. It's, oh, yeah, exciting time. Hogfather, what's happening? Brother Alton. So, Pat, just in case anybody doesn't is not familiar with you, give them a quick rundown, who you are, how the barbecue started with you, you know, leading up into the restaurants.
Yeah. So I was born in Memphis. So barbecue's kind of blood. Our family is from almost due east of Memphis, both my mom's side and my dad's side, in northeast Mississippi. It's a little town called Corinth, Mississippi. And we lived in Memphis for the first couple few years of my life. My dad's dad farmed, he's a farmer, and my dad didn't want to do that. So he went into the bond business, and we actually ended up relocating up to New England. We lived in Connecticut for a while, mm-hmm. While he worked in the city. We would get out of school, go back to Mississippi for the summers, stay on there for the summer. Obviously Christmas holidays. And, then my pawpaw died right when I had gotten into high school. So we moved back to Mississippi permanently. And, when I was a kid, you know, we ate a lot of barbecue. I mean, it was like every other Southern staple. Nobody in my family cooked it. We grilled a lot. We didn't have any gas grills. The charcoal chimney starter that a lot of us use today to start fires, there was a man from our hometown that had the patent on that. So, you know, everybody from Corinth always used a charcoal chimney starter before they were really a thing. And just a good old 22-inch Weber grill. Grilling was big on weekends, you know, with my dad, and in the summers of both my granddads. You know, and it's funny, I had some friends that about that time, you know, I'm 52, so this is in the 80s, and, you know, gas grills were kind of really becoming a thing. And, my dad isn't he's not a quiet man, not a big boisterous man, but when he says something, he says it with meaning, he means it. Mm-hmm. And I'd gone over this buddy of mine's house. He had a gas grill, his dad. I was like, Dad, you know, Bill's dad's got a gas grill. He just lights it up, you know, and that's it. I'm probably like 12, 13 at the time. Of course, he always had me lighting the grill. And then he just looked over at me and said, because we don't do it that way. We do it this way. And it was one of those things like, got it, you know, duly noted. And so anyway, you know, I started really getting into just the whole process of what the men in my family would do to start a fire, and this whole knowing they could do it easier. And I had very big, you know, larger than life men, a lot of them in my life, kind of John Wayne-esque guys, and everybody did things the hard way for something. And, you know, you jump ahead, and I'm now down in Mississippi and bought my first cookbook. It was Thrill of the Grill by a guy named Chris Schlesinger and Doc Willoughby. And I just made it a point to start trying to cook through that whole book without, you know, obviously I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd grilled burgers and some steaks before with my family, but that was it, you know. And so you jump down, and I graduate high school, and I go to this little school up in West Tennessee. So like Corinth is almost due east. Like if Memphis is in the very, very southwest tip corner of the state of Tennessee, Corinth is in the very, very northeast corner in the state of Mississippi. So it's almost due, you know, east, mm-hmm. east, southeast. So when I went to school, I went due north, almost to Jackson, Tennessee, if by chance you know where that is. It's a little school called Freed Hardeman, and get there, get in my dorm room. My whole family went to Mississippi State, and I went up to this little school for try to play some sports. And like the third day I was there, I was like, all right, where's the barbecue joints? You know what I mean? Because that was just a weekly thing. And come to find out, you know, Henderson, Tennessee, it's in Chester County, is about 80-odd miles east of Memphis. And mm-hmm. all I'd known my whole life was Memphis barbecue, or that style. And you go there, and I walk in this little place, typical little barbecue joint, you know, a little slide window, a few tables, thing over here where you can get your Cokes out, little Debbie's all over the place, and then these little potato chips. Man slides a window, asked me what I wanted. I said a regular, you know, sandwich. He said, you want hot sauce or mild sauce? Of course, he didn't ask if slaw came on it, because slaw is always supposed to come on a sandwich. I said mild sauce, and he just turned to his right and picked this lid up. You know, it was like cardboard, and there was a whole hog right there, and he's pulled it out the hog and made me a sandwich. And that just was like jaw-dropping to me, you know. And so I just literally was like, I mean, it had such a massive impact on me that, you know, well, here I am today. So that man's name was Harold Thomas, and the place was Thomas and Webb Barbecue. And Mr. Harold was a real big man, but very genteel, had no secrets, wanted to teach. And I just started hanging around that joint as much as I possibly could. And jump ahead now, going in my sophomore year after I'd been hanging around him for a while, and he, you know, taught me how to cook, taught me everything I know, as far as my, at that, my base level of knowledge of how to cook barbecue. And now I'm doing, you know, fraternity parties and sorority things, and just anybody that needed a little party, I would cook a hog. So, man, I went on and try to shorten it, not to bore you, but I followed my dad's path, and I started trading bonds. I didn't want to live up north again, so I went to work in Charlotte, North Carolina, for Nations Bank, which is now Bank of America. And so I'm alone in Charlotte, and I'm off on weekends, and I literally had nothing to do, so I just drove all over North Carolina to eat barbecue. I drive, you know, due north up near like Lexington and all that area, Western North Carolina style, and then start driving over towards Raleigh and Goldsboro and all over in there to eat whole hog. You know, their hogs are a little bit different than ours, or how they do them. We can get into that later if you want. But then I moved back to, I had gotten married and too young. And we basically chose her career over mine. I loved Nashville. I had transferred to Nashville. I'm sorry. I transferred to a school called Lipscomb in Nashville. And to get my ex-wife back to closer where she could write, I was trying to find something in my field. So I had to leave trading. So I went to fixed income sales. Well, I got a job in Memphis, and I'm back in Memphis. And while I'm there, I befriended an old legendary guy from Memphis named John Willingham. John was one of the original founders of Memphis in May. He had a place called Willingham's. It eventually burned down. I started helping John. First time I helped him, I started hanging around John's spot. And he was running for office in 98. And Memphis in May came around. He asked me to help cook his hog. So I pulled third shift, graveyard shift. And we ended up coming in fourth. John was just out politicking, and it was a great hog. You know, and John got it started. I mean, it was just fun to cook with John, you know. And then we finally got ourselves to Nashville where she could be. She had signed with Sony Tree on their publishing side. And, you know, so we're here, and we ended up getting a divorce after 5 years. And I was making pretty good money. But, you know, I'd always had this dream. I was going to try to build my wealth doing that. And then when I was basically about the age I'm at now, open up a barbecue joint one day and do what I really loved. And good Lord, didn't have it that way for me. So I ended up finding this little place in Nolensville. I remarried, had a son, my daughter, my wife is pregnant with my daughter, with money. And found this little place that was about 950 square feet above a mechanic in a little suburb called Nolensville outside of Nashville, about 30 minutes. And ironically, I never went to Nolensville that much. It had been a little Mexican taco shop, and they had been evicted. And I took the place over, and that was it. And Martin's Barbecue Joint was born. And it was really I love helping people, especially people who are trying to get in the restaurant business now. But I have no business. God's really blessed me. I have no business still being here. I had never run a restaurant. Felt really confident in my food, and I felt really confident in what the brand I was trying to put forth. I don't even know how to think about it in that way, actually, like a brand. I knew the music I wanted you to hear. I knew the stuff I wanted you to see on the walls. I knew I'm gonna run it the old way. I mean, I'm only gonna cook so much every day, and I'm gonna run out. Still do that today. Don't have a freezer or microwave in any. Got 9 Martins. I don't have a freezer or microwave in any of them, and I don't buy anything in. So, yeah, man, we opened it up, and it was real reckless. You know, I guess in a, I was in a real healthy, I don't give a crap place in my life at the time. You know, I mean, I was broke and just was in that moment, you know, where I was just, all I cared about was that pit and cooking food. And so here I am. That was my story on how I got into it.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, because obviously me being up here in, you know, New England, everybody calls me, hey, I'm going to such and such area, you know, you got any good places to go and eat? So, of course, Nashville is the hot spot. So they're all down there. And you know, I go, where are you? I'm in Nashville. Head downtown, go to Martin's, trust me. They're like, yeah,
I appreciate that, man.
Trust me. I go, call me back. Tell me what you think. Tell me I'm wrong. Everyone calls back. He goes, damn, man. He goes, that was the best pork I've ever had. It was incredible.
That's flattering.
He goes, Mags, it blows yours out of the water. I go, yeah, no shit.
No, I can't. Come on.
I go, what else? He goes, man, that barbecue sauce, those barbecue sauces he has, they were incredible. I go, uh-huh, I didn't tell you about that, you know. But, yeah, everybody who held me up, you know, I always send them down to you when they're in that area. I go, you will not be disappointed. And
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot. Thank you.
You know, they've been everywhere. So you did say one that's a great question. So you're talking like the Carolina hogs. What's the difference in like West Tennessee hog versus, you know, the Carolinas or whole hog cooking, I suppose, in general?
So first of all, let me start with I'm not a best guy. I think that's a stupid term. I think that, you know, I say that leading out, like, I don't think that West Tennessee whole hog is the best, right? I'm a very competitive guy. Don't get me wrong, but man, outside of Michael Jordan and Jesus, I really don't know who can really put best on, right? At least that's my opinion. Maybe a handful somewhere in there, whatever. But, so I love North Carolina style whole hog. I love barbecue everywhere because I like to appreciate the regional differences of it. You know, like I've said a lot, like if France has their cheese, you drive 50 miles, it changes. In the United States, we have our barbecue and the same thing, especially in the South. So the big difference is, to get to your question, West Tennessee whole hog is kind of the bastard child. Because not a lot of people even know about it. I mean, a lot of food writers and editors still don't know or very familiar with it, you know. And I would say that only probably in the past 5 or 10 years is really a lot of the barbecue folks become aware of it. Because it was only like 5 counties. You know, you had Memphis, which is, you know, one of the 5 pillars of barbecue regions. And you have all these sub-regions, you know, chicken with white sauce in North Alabama and blah, blah, blah. So it was very small, right? And how it got there, man, I don't know. I know that we all migrated west. I mean, our family came from North Carolina and South Carolina, the Martins. We came in from Ireland and Scotland through Charleston and just kept going west as you could get land. So I imagine it happened that way. But along that way, it changed. And I'm guessing it was because of regionality and winters. And the reason I say that is because, and that's just me guessing, But the reason I say that is we cook larger hogs than they do in the Carolinas. We cook what the old folks commonly used to refer to as sausage hogs, meaning you fatten the hog up to put it up for winter. You're going to, you know, cure the hams and make country hams out of them. And the sides, you're going to, you know, put your bacon in. You were going to grind a lot of it and make sausage, chops, you know, all that, right? And not that you couldn't do that with some of the hogs that they do in the Carolinas, but not like you can the big, big fat ones, right? Mm-hmm. So our hogs generally are about 185 to 200 pounds, whereas in the Carolinas, you'll find that they're kind of the standard money weight is 125. Mm-hmm. We cook longer at a lower temp. So we cook a standard West Tennessee hog is cooked for 24 hours. And we cook after the flip. Don't really pay attention to it on the front end, but because we're trying to cook a little bit hotter, just like everybody does, just to knock the chill out of the hog. But after the flip, really even before the flip, we're backed it down to about 190 to 195. And we're cooking that low, and this is where it really gets stylistically, whereas in the Carolinas, they'll cook 250, 260, 270, sometimes as low as 225, but they're cooking hotter because they, when that hog is done for them, they are going to take everything in there and take it out. And you've seen it, Ed Mitchell or Sam Jones and those guys, and they're going to chop the entire hog up, mix their flavor profiles in it while they chop it, fold it, chop it, fold it. Whereas in West Tennessee, we only pull ours. And actually, even more, another little nuance is a lot of the older folks were specific about where they wanted their meat pulled from for their sandwich. Somebody wanted lean meat, you get it from the ham. If they wanted real lean meat or extra lean meat, you get it from the loin. Fatty mm-hmm. meat, the belly, you know, so on and so forth. So it's we don't mix anything in with it. We build our sandwiches the same way. Slaw is always on top. We both mm-hmm. use a vinegar-based sauce. We use a vinegar-based sauce that's got some in it. It's not real sweet, but it is sweet. Whereas they use no sugar in there traditionally in their vinegar-based sauces. Vinegar is important because, like a vinaigrette, you have a fat and an acid, and you need those two to balance each other out, right? The fat in a vinaigrette, say it's an olive oil, the acid is a vinegar. Well, I liken that to whole hog, especially whole hog, because the fat in this case is obviously the belly and the shoulder, but you need that acid to clean your palate, you know, and you also need that mm-hmm. acid because in a lot of areas that hog, there's so much collagen, so much muscle fiber that once it turns gelatinous, it's just like, it's almost like glue on your mouth. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about mm-hmm. right now. So that acid helps clean that. So an acidic sauce is extremely important, I think, in barbecue in general, but especially as you talk about whole hog. I'd say the last bit is two things. You know, hickory wood is what's predominant here in the South, like what I'd say the mid-South, the non-coastal South. Some people use some oak, but hickory is really the traditional flavor. Seasoned hickory, not green hickory, because green hickory is what I think has put a lot of people off on barbecue, where they're belching that white, mm-hmm. acrid smoke up from either an inexperienced cook or wood that's too green. But, you know, we end up burning all those off anyway when we're cooking hogs because we burn all our wood down to coals, but you do get a smoke, and it's a more subtle smoke in whole hog than in pit barbecue in general than you ever would get in a smoker. Carolinas, they use oak, a lot of live oak. I'm a big believer the best wood to use is the wood that's in your area, you know. And last but not least, they blister their skins and chop them up and fold them in. And man, I wish we did that, but we can't because we cook so low that we need that whole skin to basically form a bowl to keep that yeah. fat in. And why that's so important is that the hams are always the last to get done. They're always what we call dragging the hams. And you know, that belly meat is that fat starts to render there and starts to come out of the neck and the shoulders and it pools up there. That belly meat ends up, it's basically a confit as a process in cooking whole hog barbecue, especially in West Tennessee wow. style, where that confit takes place, and you've probably seen it where you can look at a hog on a belly and you can see just little bubbles percolating, right? Mm-hmm. And that meat is just sitting in that fat, and that's what gives whole hog, both styles, a very unique flavor. But because we don't chop ours up, if you got a belly sandwich from us, from a West Tennessee style hog, it's that that flavor is like none other, you know?
Yeah.
But I do wish we could put, I mean, we could, but put those skins in there. But that skin that we use, you can't pierce it. You know, you have to be careful with it when you're going down the spine. That's why I don't use a bandsaw when I cut my spine. I use a hatchet and a hammer. I want to be very careful about not piercing that skin.
Oh man, I'm hungry. I ain't gonna lie to you. you got me going. Oh, Aaron Leslie, what's up, brother? Uncle Steve, I understand there is an R in Martin's, but from Boston, I do say the R. You know, you don't say anything if I say, you know, your seasoning, you know, the spicy R. You know, that'll get them all riled up right there. The spicy R by Uncle Steve's. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I never really thought of the skin as a tool, technically.
Yeah, it is.
Hold something in there. Oh, man. So, yeah, that's good stuff. So then that led through the years down to the book, which we had talked about a couple of years ago, just after, I think it was already just out when you were on with me. And like I said, the book was fantastic. You know,
I appreciate it.
And, you know, starting the fire, maintaining the fire, getting ready.
Yeah, man. You know, you get a lot of, look, when I did that book, what I didn't want it to be, it's similar when we get into the show in a minute, but I knew what I wanted to be, but I knew even more what I didn't want it to be. I didn't want it to be the standard freaking barbecue book that everybody bought their dad for Father's Day. And, you know, it was the salt ribs with the 1-2-3 wrap method and just all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I very much, one, wanted to highlight my background in West Tennessee. But I really just wanted to talk about pit barbecue in there because it's just not talked about a lot. You know, a lot, there's just, especially in the competition world or just in the restaurant world in general, I mean, smokers are so prevalent and they're both wonderful. I have both. I use both, but there's just something special about pit barbecue. And on top of that, with that book, I didn't want the book to be a recipe book. I wanted it to be a procedure book. Yeah. And so, you know, the whole hog chapter in there alone is like, or the whole hog recipe alone is like 36 pages.
Yeah.
Because it takes you from start to finish. You know, if you do it my way, you're looking at 30 hours, man, from start to finish. That is building a block pit, starting a fire, baking the ground off, getting the pit hot. By the time you're done, got the hog done, you've let it rest and sit for a couple hours before people eat it. You're 30 hours into this thing, you know? So I wanted to really, with everything in there, give love to the procedure, not just write some book that, I mean, I was fortunate enough that I was asked to do the book. I wasn't looking for a book deal. I was also fortunate enough that they gave me the leeway to do what I wanted to do and understood what I was trying to say. So open pit barbecue is talked about in depth in there. That's something that's not talked about. I mean, I've got 1,200 cookbooks, and obviously I've a lot of those are barbecue books, and open pit barbecue is rarely ever discussed in any barbecue book, you know. Even less so than pit barbecue, than closed pit. So yeah. I wanted to go through those old ways of barbecue and get people back to the romanticism of it and like, what the heck are we sitting here cooking this for anyway? You know, are we sitting this to hurry up and get an end product? Or are we sitting here cooking this to learn and to get better, sit around with our buddies, spend time, slow down, very important. And then there's the end product. Mm-hmm. And that's really the essence of barbecue, man, to me. You know,
100% that the time and the patience it takes, you know, but it forces you to slow down. which, you know, in today's age is few and far between, I think.
You know, it is. It is, man. We've got too many gadgets, you know, and look, man, like I said, you know, like I think that Food Network and Competition Barbecue have been the two single greatest vehicles to take barbecue out of the regional South, like absolutely. And unbeknownst to both, but especially the competition side, it's also turned into an Achilles heel a little bit of bastardizing it some, because everything's gotten mechanized. We got a bunch of gadgets. We've got temperatures and timers. So we've lost feel as pitmasters, like a hand feel and a intuition. In some cases, we've got these thick sauces that might as well be candy bars, you know, like they're just, it's a coating. It's almost like in some, I meet some newer guys and they're basically, after I hear them talk for a minute, it's almost like, are we just cooking barbecue just to use the meat as a vehicle to get that secret sauce in your mouth or in somebody, you know, somebody tastes that. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, we've just kind of gotten off what the essence of barbecue really, you know, really is, you know. And I'm a traditionalist. I'm always going to be old school and old fashioned unless I see a way that's better than that. And like I started the show here telling you, that's how I watched all these men in my family do it. So there is some hard headedness with me on that. But sometimes, man, some things just ain't broken. And all these new books that come out now, a lot of the barbecue books, not all of them by any means, but some of the barbecue books that come out now, it's just you can tell that a publisher just wanted a new barbecue book out, and that they, in a lot of cases, maybe even so much as, because they drive a hard bargain with a lot of guys like us.
Yeah.
And they've got it in their idea with their marketing team what they want a book to be. And they don't give the writer like me a lot, like mine did. Mine gave me a tremendous amount. Like, usually Francis Lamb with Penguin is my publisher. And Francis just let me go. And so I was very blessed in that sense to tell that story. But a lot of these folks, man, it's just like they don't even meet their photographer. They write a book and they submit these recipes. And they have some dude that they've never even met in their life, never will. And he shoots that food. Come on. I started my book with the photographer, drove my publisher crazy, but we spent a year and a half shooting barbecue. Then we wrote the book.
Yeah. Ready to go. And here's one from Pat. Pat, I want lessons from you.
Man, I'll be happy to give them.
You know, but like you were saying, you know, to just take your time, slow down. Like yesterday, for example, you know, I was out cooking about, you know, 3 butts. And it's going to take, how I do it, it's, you know, 10 hours minimum. And, you know, it gave me a chance to sit down, relax, you know, breathe a little bit. My son's out there playing. So I got to catch up with him. Hey, what's new in your life? You know, how's school? How's this? And, you know, just catch that time. And then my wife came out and she had to go pick up my daughter. You know, they came home and, you know, spent some time with my wife. And, you know, but here I am doing, they're like, you know, why would you do that? Sit there with your stick burner and every, you know, 45 an hour. Because that's what I love to do. I can throw a pellet grill out there and then, you know, go to soccer practice or do it. Don't get me wrong, you know, talking to everybody I've met, you know, there are times in places that, hey, if that's how you cook it, that's fine.
Let me interject and say, like, I don't fault a man for doing that. I mean, time is time, and our whole society has sped up, you know, and the fact is that I'm spoiled living in the South, you know, and as wide ranging as barbecue has gone, and even in the South, you still may live in an area where it's just you're not going to find it as good as what you can cook it or where your expectations would be. Mm-hmm. And you also may not have the dadgum time to sit around and have this slow time catching up with your son like me and you were talking. So let me just say right now, I don't have a pellet grill, but when I get older, I'll probably have one. And mm-hmm. because when I, you know how it is, man, when you crave it, you got to have it, period.
Yep.
Right. And so I'm really more or less talking about the fact you start leaning on those things and start using that all the time. And you look up, it's death by a thousand cuts. And you mm-hmm. look up and you don't even really cook it anymore. You know, you're just looking for the end product, not the time it took to get there. And so I'm always going to try to push people to like, hey, man, use that pellet, you know, while you're on in the fall on Sundays when all these NFL games are going. I'm a big NFL yeah. fan. I don't want to be outside. I want to watch games, right? Mm-hmm. And if I also want some barbecue, I'm going to use it or my egg mm-hmm. or something like that. But sometime you got to blow the whistle on yourself and your buddies and look up and go, nah, we're not using that. No, we're going to burn a hole in the yard. We're going to screw it up and we're going to sit out here and we're going to get tired and we're going to ache and we're going to have some drinks and we're going to have fun and play cards, whatever it is. Talk to your mm-hmm. son and we're going to do it the old way and appreciate why we started getting into it in the first place.
Oh, amen, brother. Amen, brother. But you had said, you know, the TV stuff, you know, has really helped grow barbecue, you know, especially, you know, moving it around the country to other places.
Yeah, and no question.
Which brings us to, oh, I am so excited, brother. I am so excited. So, like we said, we have the book of title, Life of Fire. You have a new project coming out, and if I'm not mistaken, May 6th-ish?
That is correct.
I believe, the Outdoor Channel,
yeah.
Life of Fire with Pat Martin. You've gone to a TV series.
Yep, we have. Now,
tell me all about this. Because this is exciting.
Hold on, buddy.
Well, Pat just froze up for a second.
Can you see me okay?
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, man. So I have been talking with, you know, our food world's pretty small, not just in the barbecue world, but you know, leaning over into like the chefs and everything else too. And I've been friends with Andrew Zimmern for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And we're all just friends together. And right before COVID, a couple years before COVID, he and I started kicking around the idea. He wanted to do a barbecue show. He just started Intuitive Productions and was producing his own content for Cooking Channel and Food Network and whoever, Discovery, whoever else he's got it on so much. I don't even know who all he had it on. And then COVID hit and, you know, I'm a restaurant guy. I'm not out trying to be a TV personality. I figured out a long time ago around 2011 or 12, Guy Fieri and I were going to do something together. And it just wasn't me, man, because the nicest hotel room in the world, still ain't your mattress. And the shower in that room still ain't your shower either. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so at that time, it just, it wasn't something that I let it fizzle away, and I'm glad I did. You jump ahead now, and when AZ started talking to me about it, you know, I'm 52. I feel like I'm a young 52, but I also, man, I ache. Like, you know, I'm sitting up in the bed about 8 o'clock at night, getting ready to watch TV. You know, like if I drink, I'm drinking while the sun's out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah. You know what I mean? Those late nights ain't that ain't a thing anymore, bud. You know? So anyway, it was just like Francis was with the book. I just, I told him, I was like, hey man, I got to have some creative in this. I got to have a say in how this show goes. And it's got to fit my personality in the sense that I shoot from the hip, like always. And it's just my personality. It's my style. Some people can have a more scripted direction and a director that is a little more heavy handed. And some people like me can't. And they were like, you know, done and done. Yes. And I was like, for real? They're like, yeah, you got it. So they agreed, like, we want to show, we want to do, you know, I even told them, I was like, if you remember Tony Bourdain's first show, really before he got fairly famous, No Reservation, what was the one on CNN? The one from a long time ago. I get them mixed up.
No Reservations, because then he had one called, like The Layover. But I could be mistaken.
No, not that one. Parts. It was No Reservations, because Parts Unknown is what he had on CNN prior to him passing away. But if you look at No Reservations, it was very raw. It wasn't edited. They just kind of walked in and they just shot it. He just talked, and I just was like, "This is the closest thing I can think of to give y'all some semblance of how I would see this being shot." And they were like, done, let's do it. And so that's really how we shot it. There's very little editing in it. And again, very similar to the book, I started by telling them what I wanted to do by telling them what I didn't want it to be. And I literally was like, I do not want it to be this overly produced show. I just went into that. I also told them, I was like, no mechanical smokers, no competition barbecue. Because all that's been saturated so much in television, you know, like, and I know you got to know what I'm saying. Like, you see it now and it's almost like they're just rerunning a lot of the same shows with different people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, or a different competition or something like that. Or all the shows are competitive shows, you know, with like three panel judges and blah, blah, blah. And I just felt like that's all been really overdone. And so I started by telling them that is what I didn't want to do. And I also told them, I was like, I want to get back to the roots of barbecue. But at first they wanted it just to be about barbecue. And I was like, I really want to talk about live fire cooking. Because it's going to expand our opportunities to tell more stories. Barbecue will always be the backbone to it. But let's not just limit ourselves to that. Let's just talk about a bed of coals and what we're going to cook over a bed of coals, you know? And so, man, I wanted this show to be able to tell people's, it almost sounds cliche and cheesy, like this is the PR line you're supposed to give, but it's not. I just wanted to tell people's, the story of their family or the story of their community or the story of their race or culture or wherever they're from. And when they told me it was going on Outdoor Channel, you know, I mean, I'm a hunter. Mm-hmm. And a fisherman. I'm a big bird hunter. And I don't know. I was just like, you know, I guess they saw like, that wasn't hesitation, but I was just, it was a little confusion, you know, because you just don't like an Outdoor Channel with any food cooking. And
yeah,
AZ's got five seasons on there and they're doing they're evolving like everything else should evolve. And so they're adding more food and cooking content to their show mixed in with hunting and fishing and everything else. And I was like, well, that's cool. And so, you know, we went in and I was just like, I don't plan on doing a show that's just, you know, Bubba's out cooking barbecue and then we're going to go out and deer hunt and then bass fish in the afternoon. Like, you know, none of that. And so we told some really cool stories, man. And we're really some off the cuff stories too. You know, like I started the first episode was my story. And it's the only episode you'll probably see that's about me and cooking. Of course, it was West Tennessee Whole Hog. And there's only three of us left in the state, which really is the, at least in the state of Tennessee, cooking that style. And so Zach Parker and Dale Ramey, I asked them to come down to my farm and we cooked a hog together. And that was freaking great. I went to the place I learned. I went to Thomas and Webb. And then I went up to North Carolina and met a chef buddy of mine named Joseph Lynn. And we went fly fishing, caught some trout. Joseph is a James Beard award-winning chef, but he's an even better fisherman. And we streamside freaking cooked those things right there, made some little, you know, foil packs, got some ramps. Like it was great. Pork Steaks was episode 3. That's another thing that a lot of people used to be at a lot of the old school barbecue joints that nobody really serves anymore. So we did pork steaks, and man, I'm going to jump around, but I mean, Adam Perry Lang, I went out to LA and shot with Adam. He's a good buddy of mine. And we went to this fish market and bought, you know, they had brought in this 300-400 pound bluefin tuna. We got the collars out of them, put them on. This is the one episode where we didn't do a pit. We put them on. Adam's got one of Aaron Franklin's original smokers, offset. And we cooked the head in this collar and on these banana leaves, but it just laid on the banana leaves. We didn't wrap them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And bro, it was like A5 Wagyu. Like I couldn't eat much of it. It was so rich. And it was like, I wanted to keep eating more, but my body was like, stop it right now. You're going to vomit if you keep going. We did this guy, Yia Vang. He's from the Hmong culture up in Minneapolis. He was born in a concentration camp, you know, in Laos. And
oh, wow.
His dad was 14 fighting for the CIA and his uncle, and they freaking lived. And the Lutherans brought a lot of the Hmongs to Minneapolis. And so the largest Hmong culture in the United States is in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And so I wanted to tell that story, you know, and like we did a whole pig head in the ground with this pink sticky rice, which is very specific to their culture. And that was a beautiful story to tell. We did Brian Furman, who's a buddy of mine out of South Carolina with this guy, Howard Conyers. And Howard's, they're both black. Howard's from the PD region of South Carolina. Howard is a NASA physicist, but he is a walking barbecue historian, especially as it pertains to black culture. And so we talked about that. We talked about, you know, a lot of the, especially post-slavery, a lot of the folks that were actually sitting up doing a lot of the hard work weren't white. And that doesn't get talked about a lot. So we talked about that. I guess the last episode was where, you know, I've been cooking barbecue now or into it now for over 35 years, 37 really. And Santa Maria Barbecue, this is the one guy I did not know. He's a friend of a friend. His name's Nick Predite. So I called Nick and I'm like, hey man, I want to come out, you know, and I'd love to have the opportunity to shoot you. And tell the story on Santa Maria Barbecue. And Nick is younger, born and raised in California. And Nick was real quick to tell me, he's like, he said it with like a, he wasn't an asshole, but he said it with like a firmness in his voice. He was like, all right, man, well, like, if you want to come out and tell this story, you need to understand right now what real Santa Maria Barbecue is. And so I'm on the phone. I'm just like, all right, well, you know, what is it? And of course I'm thinking he's going to say tri-tip, and he just first sentence, he goes, it ain't tri-tip. And I was just like, whoa, you know, yeah. Like record scratch. Right. Yep. And he starts going through the story, and that whole episode tells his story about the original migration from Mexico, the cattle migration, which we don't even get a lot. I wasn't taught that in school. I knew about it, but I wasn't taught it. You know, you always talk about the cattle drive west, right? Lonesome Dove. But they went up through the mountains and up through California, and they had a cut called the top block, which is the picanha, the petite sirloin, and the sirloin. It basically looks like a big pork shoulder, or size-wise, right? They would cut those into 2-inch steaks. So we cooked those, talked about regenerative farming, which I'm a capitalist, big time, but I'm also an environmentalist, and I believe we treat our environment like crap, you know, just so we can all, as a capitalist, so we can make more money. It's just coming from a kid, from a guy whose whole family is basically, at least my dad's side, all farmers. We still have our original family farm. My uncle does. And regenerative farming is like the old way of farming. No Roundup, you know, none of that stuff. We're going to let Mother Nature really have a heavy hand in how we're going to raise crops. And there's a lot of ways it's more profitable. So when we did the pork steaks, we talked about regenerative farming for pork. And then when we did the top block, we did regenerative farming for beef. Assuming a season 2 comes around, we're going to talk about some regenerative farming with vegetables. But it was just a lot of fun stories to tell, and you know, tell about a lot of people's cultures, man, that just don't get told much. And we did it all over a bed of coals and burning wood down the wood that was in that region with that protein or meat, and sat around and told our stories, or they did, and I listened to them. So I'm real proud of it. I'm proud of how it turned out, you know?
Yeah, that's tremendous. Like I said, I saw Michelle was nice enough to send me the trailer for the show, and I didn't know if I was going to be able to, you know, show it. So I just kept it on myself. But man, it looks fantastic. You can see the you said it was only a 40-second trailer for the whole season, and you could see in your face, the people you were with faces, the enjoyment, the camaraderie, the friendship, you know, of, like you said, you're sitting around a bed of coals and, you know, talking and just telling stories. And you saw that, you know, traveling to the different places. And it's definitely going to be different.
Yeah, it's one of the, I would say it this way. Like, if you're, first of all, just to like, for barbecue folks, like if you're a barbecue nerd, if you're like deep into competition, or if you don't even do competition barbecue, or you're in the restaurant business, or you have a little weekend thing on the side of the road, or you just cook for your friends, man, this show is definitely for the purist, you know, and like it definitely will scratch that itch from a romanticism standpoint of like barbecue and what barbecue is, and probably somewhere within all of us, wherever we saw it, whether it was friends or families or some event or something on TV or whatever it is, it strikes that chord of what hooked all of us in the first place into this. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, and then there's just so many people who aren't barbecue purists. My daughter just pulled up, so if she comes piling out of here with all loud music, I'm sorry, man, but she's 17. Right. And she's in that space, bud.
I know.
yeah. For the non-barbecue purists, or just people who like food in general, like, it's what I've noticed, especially with like chefs, like they just have this burning passion no more about barbecue because it's not talked about in culinary school. We've already talked about earlier on this, like the kind of barbecue that they get on TV limits what they know, mm-hmm. because it's very defined, and they've now geared a lot of it towards some competition, you know, with a panel of judges up there and all that to see who wins. But it leaves out a lot of the skill of it. You know what I mean? And like the culture and the background of it. So I wanted them to be able to get something too. And telling these stories, man, and this culture and what barbecue is, but also some of the procedures of it, if each one of these things we're cooking, was it'll scratch all those itches.
Oh, beautiful. I'm excited for you, brother. It looks good. I can't wait. And it's going to be May 6th. So what's that, 2 weeks?
Yeah.
2 weeks from now.
Yeah, 2 weeks from today. So 10 episodes, so run 10 weeks. And yeah. That'd be fun.
Good times, brother. Good times. Like I said, so folks, go check that out. The outdoor channel. Obviously on your available on your cable providers. There's probably a couple of the streaming services will have it on. But you know, like I said, folks, I only saw a 40-second clip of a trailer of the episodes, and
I'm sure they won't mind if you show that, man. I mean, they're not going to. What are they going to do? Shut you down? I mean, just show it. Who cares?
Yeah,
ask for forgiveness, not permission.
I can't even bring it up. It's
it's on the phone. Yeah, I got
it. It's on the phone, you know. But yeah, it just, like you said, it's going to be different from what we've been getting used to, you know, the competition circuit and the this. You know, it reminds me of if you go into like a wormhole on YouTube, and you know, almost
very much
documentary series like the old ones.
Yeah,
where it's people you've never heard before, and you know, it's an older gentleman, his wife, and their dog in a Winnebago, and you know, they're bringing out the Weber kettles and they're cooking a competition. But you know, you never hear the Compart, Wagyu, this, you know, they're just getting the local, the original way.
Man, they're just cooking.
They're just cooking, you know.
Just cooking.
And I think this, what you're doing with this show, is right along those lines. You know, it's keeping it real. It's raw. It's real. And it's going to be tremendous.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's not, you know, it's just a side that, it's not the side, it's the thing, it's what barbecue is. But, you know, we as Americans, man, like, we didn't invent barbecue, but we are definitely the society that stuck our flag in the ground, said it's ours, and we're going to identify with it.
Yep.
And I would say we're the most competitive nation, maybe in the history of man. And so it's natural for us to want to get into and like, forget about competition barbecue, like Kansas City Barbecue Society or Memphis in May. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about like on network television, where if it's not a competition, the viewer is going to lose interest, right? That's what they've been feeding us for a decade plus, right? And this is the antithesis of that, you know, it just is by design. You know, just to tell the story, get back to the roots and slow down.
Beautiful. Ah, I can't wait. Like I said, folks, May 6th, 2 weeks, tune in Outdoor Channel. You will not be disappointed for sure. But Pat, thank you so much for giving me the time. I know you're busy. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you for giving me your time. I appreciate you very much. Very much.
Anytime, brother. Anytime. Where can everybody follow you social media-wise to keep up with everything?
At Pitmaster Pat is my Instagram handle. At Life of Fire is the handle for Instagram on that. I am not on Facebook. I got off that. It's too much gossiping on that thing. And I got off Twitter a while ago, and I'm getting back on it. So, but Instagram is really it for me. I don't even know how to get on TikTok or Snapchat, so I'm assuming you're not asking that because you don't look like you've got those accounts either. But
yeah,
Pitmaster Pat is it, man. And just get on there or give me a follow. I'm going to be doing a lot more content on it than I usually do just because of this. So I hope I see you on there.
All right. Todd, not June 6th, May 6th. So – just right around 2 weeks from now, the first episode airs. Hey, Chef Johnny, what's up, brother? But Pat, man, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you. And this is going to be fantastic.
Thank you, man.
And, you know, whenever you got anything going on, you know it, brother. The door's open. Just you know, send me a message, call, smoke signals, whatever. We'll get it done, brother.
All right, bud. I appreciate it. You come to Nashville, let me know.
All right, Pat. Take care, brother.
Thanks, bud. See you, man.
Take it easy. Oh, what an interview, guys. Pat's such a great guy. And if you are ever in the Nashville area, he's got, I want to say he's got three restaurants in the Nashville, one downtown and the surrounding areas. Martin's Barbecue Joints. They're fantastic. They're awesome. And yeah, also Kentucky, South Carolina, and Alabama. So if you're in any of those and want to go check Pat's restaurant out, I believe there's 9 to go hit up. But hey, guys, thank you all for tuning in. This is just a great way. Oh, Joe's Meat Market, there's the Instagram link. Appreciate it, brother. Thank you. the hell was I saying? Yeah, it's Monday night. Let's start the... We just finished yesterday, but let's start the this week in queue going right now. So thank you all for tuning in each and every Monday. And till next week, keep the smoke rolling.